Greetings, good people. What's going on? What's going on? This is off the record. Extra off the record. We have gathered here today on this fine evening to talk about subjects as we normally do. We have the usual cast of characters and a newer cast of character. You know what that means. So yes, starting with my left, I've got the angriest Scott in the building.
There you go, bagpipes and all.
Yes.
Yes. Dan Duncan, what's up, guys?
Danny boy.
You can find me on Twitter at Dan Dunk. Let me know when I piss you off, because that's why I'm here.
That's nice. Why that's,
he just owns it.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. That's what's up. That other voice that you hear is our lovable giant. Yes. Hilarious comedian extraordinaire.
Yes. I'll take all of this, but
you'll take all of
I'll take all of these. Yes.
Okay. The man who can only show up consistently for 4th and 10 and barely makes it off the record. Because he's too Hollywood. But I'm glad. Happy to see him. What's going on, man? This is David Perdue. What up?
Man, what's going on, y'all? I'm happy to listen. I was nervous that last podcast. Y'all was really talking a lot of noise about me not being there. And then you were excellent. And like, I'm just like, that's it. That was my time had come. So I'm like, happy I got the invite to come back. Like, I had to move a lot to get here. I was like, man, because if I miss two, they gonna forget about me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm happy, man.
It is a Bill Clinton crime bill around here. Like, yeah, three strikes.
That's what I'm saying. I made moves to get here.
That is what's up. But we also have the woman who was coming for your job. She was coming for your neck last yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Back by popular demand, mm-hmm. From within the podcast and from the 4th District community, Miss Yvette. Is it Broughton?
Yvette Broughton, but yeah. I go by Yvette Ayana.
Ah.
You can find me on Twitter there as well.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful. Would you mind spelling your Twitter handle for the good people
Absolutely.
Out there?
Absolutely. It is YV as in victory. Yvette Ayana. Yvette Ayana.
Wonderful, wonderful. Hold
on. I just realized y'all both have amazing radio voices, like microphone voices, and I'm a little intimidated right now. I'll be honest. I was like,
rightfully so.
Man.
Rightfully so.
Real quiet. It came back to me real quiet.
That is what's up. Well, yeah, man, we are missing Mr. Show Baraka, but he is here in spirit. But we've got more than enough to talk about. Man, so much has happened. So much has happened. I was trying to figure out where to begin, but we're going to begin, of course, with kind of one of the more recent news items that came out. I think it was Friday that are the great, legendary.
The greatest.
Yeah, the greatest.
The greatest.
I got to add the extra superlative there. The definition of the GOAT himself, Muhammad Ali, just sports icon. Has a life icon has essentially transitioned on, and man, we just kind of wanted to kind of break that down a little bit and kind of get our reactions. Like Dan, I guess. Well, actually, let me start with you, David. Where were you when you heard the news?
What was that? I think I was at a comedy club where I spent all my time. So I'm always there. Yeah, I remember looking down and just it was kind of. His mom was like, "Well, I think." Earlier in the day, there was like report that he went to the hospital, and I remember thinking like, "I can't, like, nah, like not." Even though you know, like, I haven't heard his voice in years,
right?
But it's just like some people are just like, "No, right?" Like they don't. And then when I saw it, I was just like, "Man, it just my heart dropped, man." That was like, I'm an Ali fan to say the least.
Absolutely.
And yeah. So it was. I was at a comedy club, man, and nothing was funny about that moment. It was
Understood.
Real sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Yvette? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think I was. I think I woke up really early that morning, and you know, shamefully was checking my phone
of
and
course.
Checking my social media, and you know, saw reports of the news. So it was definitely like. Aw, you know, really like, and I had just spent the weekend with my family, and my dad is, my dad's like 70. So okay. I think, you know, when you see that number 74, it just really, on one hand, it brings just life to the forefront.
Right. Absolutely.
But I also, at the same time, even though I was sad with some of the more recent passings of other celebrities and then being so young, I felt grateful that, man, what a way to live. Like,
gotcha.
You know, this man really lived his life, and you know, we can kind of just take pause and say he was the greatest of all time and look back at such an amazing, amazing legacy. So it was sad, but you know, it just had a different feeling.
Right.
At the same time.
I completely understand that. Yeah. Similarly, I'll just say that. So my parents were in town from Ohio, and I was hanging with my dad for like the whole weekend, and he's 75, I think, 74, 75. And, you know, so of course, when the news came out, like, he had all these like, stories of like him being around during so much of his career. But yes, it does give you pause, because you're like, yeah, like Muhammad Ali's my dad's age or around there, and those thoughts. But, you know, I as well thought, kind of similar to you, David, I was like, when I heard that he was passing, when I got the news that it was not looking good for him, I also kind of was like, I was in some ways like I was ready to let him go in this way, because, you know, over 30 years dealing with Parkinson's.
Right. Come on.
And on top of that, just when you look at the entire bent of his life, so much he lived a very full life, man, for a few people, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so it was kind of like, man, you know, there was a lot that occurred there. And so while I was mournful, it was also kind of like, you know, you've earned the next step or whatever. But Dan, what about you in terms of when, you know, where were you Friday and just everything dealing with that?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, obviously I come from a little different just background. Like, Muhammad Ali was never talked about for me growing up, so I only heard about him just through, you know, sports. He was always just framed as the greatest boxer that's ever lived. Mm-hmm. But as far as like being someone who kind of transcended athleticism into greater things, like, that was just never something I really learned until I was probably like 9 or 10 years old. I had open heart surgery. I couldn't walk because of the way they did the surgery at the time. They broke your sternum. You were laid up for a long time.
I'm really surprised. I don't know why I thought I should know this stuff.
That's
but
intense.
It was also like, why like,
hold
did
on.
I know this?
So it was 1996 when the Olympics were happening.
Right.
And I remember like being laid up and watching Muhammad Ali, like, you know, do his best to carry the torch in.
Yeah,
and
I
this day, it was like, it's like one of like the monumental moments of my life that I was just like, where I started to understand like what's, to struggle and to strive and to kind of become somebody that kind of transcend, like, to light the Olympic torch, obviously, and to be the final one, like, it means an immense. So that was like my first time being like in this place, struggling and seeing someone who was clearly struggling as well.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, I started to learn about his past and his, I mean, obviously his athletic feats, but also his conversion. And really the spiritual leader that Muhammad Ali is. And again, for those, to be able to pass for him, I think it's very interesting and important 2 days before Ramadan begins.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, that's different than my faith, but for him, being so, a spiritual leader for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah. And I'd throw with that, cause I'm one of those people as well. Like with Dr. Martin Luther King, right. When he's talked about, he means so much to a lot of people and everyone that I don't, you know, I'm very like protective in ways, not just with regard to blackness, but really like, with his Christianity, I'm like, don't remove that aspect out
from
of
who
him.
He is. Mm-hmm.
When you talk about the feats that he's achieved and the things that he was able to accomplish, I'm like, no, his faith was very central and very core to like, you know, all of his advocacy and all of his activism. And so similarly with Ali, like you said, like I'm not Muslim, but I'm very conscious about like making sure that that's included in his story, because it's
sure.
so important.
Yeah.
To what propelled him, I think, you know what I mean? I thought about that when you were talking.
Yeah. Go ahead, Yvette.
I just also too wanted to add, it's like when people pass away, especially like lately, like with Prince passing away and Muhammad Ali passing away, you really start to think about how you're living your life. Because when they leave, there's always another generation who isn't as familiar with them, and it starts to, you know, their death it like invites people, mm-hmm. right, to read and to learn and to experience who they were. So I just always find death so interesting because it's almost like people are alive again, mm-hmm. and they're reintroduced in a new way. So it's just so important. I think it reminds me, like, just really make sure you're living your life to the fullest, because people may not really get to know you until
true.
You're gone,
right.
and mm-hmm. you can still spark change long after, you know, you've transitioned.
Yeah. To speak on that, like, I think one of the things immediately I thought when he passed, and it's kind of the same thing with Prince that like you were saying, is who then fills these voids? You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
who could be? And then you look at the like, just how Ali, like, this, his life, and you're just like, oh, no one. Like,
basically,
it's impossible. And like, for me, I'm a casual fan of boxing. And so I, you know, like, maybe slightly more, like, I'm a little fan of boxing, but like, for some, I never saw him box in my lifetime. You see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I was born in 87. He was done.
Right.
Right. And to know, like, the Ali for me that I know had very little to do with boxing.
Right.
You know what I mean? The Ali for me was like, this dude did what in 67?
Right. He's the guy in the barbershop, like on the wall.
Yeah. You know, not only that, but like, and this is like one of my, I posted on Facebook. It was like, one of my favorite things about Ali, I don't know, these two people are not necessarily in the same breath, but like, what Ali means to me is kind of similar. Like, Ali and George Jefferson.
Okay.
You hear me out. Reason why I say
I'm
that.
Try.
Break that
George
down.
Jefferson, this is comedy talking.
Sure.
George Jefferson was just a dude. He talked however he wanted to, and in the 70s. You just look, mm-hmm. like, in historically looking like, you can't do that now. And but that was just a fictional character.
Right.
And then you look at Ali.
Man.
Talking the way he talked.
Come on.
Backing up. And you're just like, how was he able to, how was he allowed to exist? Like,
who is this guy?
He's a unicorn. It doesn't make any sense. And
right.
then do you talk to any older black man and you realize the significance
yes.
that Ali had for that. Before I left here, I was listening to, I don't know who he was. Maybe it was one of Ali's like friends or whatever. And there was Ali was about to fight. And he said he went to a restroom, mm-hmm. And it was a 72-year-old dude there. Mm-hmm. This is back in the day, like back when Ali was about to fight. He was literally about to go to a fight. 72-year-old older black man who was working in the bathroom. He asked him, "Who you got in the fight?" He was like, "Ali, obviously." And he's like, "Why you got Ali?" And the old man said, "He said Ali gave me dignity."
Mm-hmm.
And you start realizing the significant, like, in, yeah. you know, for older black men, this young black man in the 60s is like
the courage,
But then. You, not only just on in the ring, mm-hmm. but then to be like, not like the stance on Vietnam, like,
yeah, super. I mean, he was a very vocal. He was not going to be quiet
yeah.
about about him, about his blackness, about his faith,
yes.
about anything. He was like, I'm going to turn the volume up. I think it's interesting. I want to pivot as well, like, to you, Dan, about this, because, you know, we kind of talk as well about, like, you know, our heroes are like. The what makes our heroes great is that they're complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. there's things that they do. You're just like, they're so amazing and otherworldly. But part of what makes them that is that they have these like complexities to them, right?
Totally.
You know what I mean? And there's some, you know, when I look at someone like Ali, right? You can talk about like his insults that he like hurled at Joe Frazier
yeah,
for all
problems.
Those years. You know what I mean? And they're really like based upon like. Playing into colorism in a lot
right.
of ways, like he was really, you know, this dark backwoods like that type of language,
right.
And he eventually apologized, but they very much hurt Joe Frazier mm-hmm. for a long time, and mm-hmm. you
Joe
know,
I mean, Joe Frazier went to his grave still very much at odds with Muhammad Ali,
absolutely, and really, you know, and one of the other regrets that I know Ali had was he kind of. You know, not sold out, but he washed his hands of Malcolm, you know, when mm-hmm. Elijah Muhammad and the Nation had essentially excommunicated Malcolm, Muhammad Ali aligned with them and was like, yeah, you know, and there was this friendship there that Malcolm felt betrayed and never really got that apology, you know, mm-hmm. you know, because he was obviously murdered. But, you know, there's those aspects of him. But you have, you know, professional trolls, in my opinion. Piers Morgan,
mm-hmm.
who kind of weighed in.
Name
who kind of weighed in.
Come through.
Right. Come through. off the record, if you want to talk. But he kind of weighed in and essentially was his remark that, that Ali was more racist than Donald Trump.
Exactly.
Those were the languages.
That's exactly the language of the tweet.
Yeah, like, and you know, of course, like I said, Piers Morgan loves to just troll in ways like that, right?
Sure.
But I think the, you know, if I assume the absolute best, better than I likely should of Piers Morgan, but if I assume the absolute best, I think he would remark that, man, if you look at some of Ali's statements in isolation, they come off as, you know, more xenophobic, more racist than, actually xenophobia actually isn't true, but more racist than whatever we are, you know, complaining about with regard to Donald Trump currently. And whether or not we believe that or not, I want to bring up Piers as well as Bob Costas, who weighed in as well about the statements that Ali said about, you know, when he changed his name from Cassius, saying like, I don't want to have a slave name and things like that. Just, you know, what were your thoughts, I think, when you think about like our stars in that way?
Yeah, no, I think real quick, I was driving and I kind of had this moment before we kind of moved into answering your question that how sad is it that, you know, we have Muhammad Ali and he, and thankfully for him, he's been able to kind of be freed of this terrible disease. But it's like you think about the dudes he walked with, that he led with, like the Malcolm X's and the Martin Luther King. Like, what if these men were not assassinated? Like, what would the world, like, I just had this moment of like kind of mourning like the reality of life, that like I get it, I don't get it, but I strive to try to understand what it's like to say like, this man helped me find myself and my identity. But that the only one of those men made it to 74,
right?
And it's like, man, that's so hard. And anyway, yeah. I just had a moment of like, what if? But
yeah,
unfortunately in life, we just don't have that luxury. So, but as far as like Piers Morgan goes, this is something I'm really interested in, because to be honest, we kind of talked about the complexities. You know, I think we are giving probably Piers Morgan in this conversation a little bit more due diligence than he probably deserves. But I do wonder, you know, if he was accurate. I mean, he quotes Muhammad Ali, and I can read the statement if we're really that interested. But it is very, very racist in a sense of his stance. Now, he exists in a day and an age, and if you take that quote out of that culture and out of that time period, of course it's going to be, to us and our PC world, like, how could one ever say that? But this was being said on every single street corner, in every single way, by multiple people at the time. But it is, so, you know, I would like to say, do we do them a disservice, and do we do history a disservice? Because I got my degree in history, so I've seen a lot of revisionist history in my life, and like,
yeah,
and studied it a lot. Would we actually do the crime of not listening to Piers Morgan just because we don't want to see that side of them, and say, yeah, he was, and learn from that, and how can we grow from that? Would we do that? Is really the question.
I was trying to figure out what Ali said that was like, where you were like, that's probably racist.
So he said, and so there's some truth to it, I guess. Again, to take it out of its culture, I'm acknowledging that this is a dangerous thing to do, but
right.
I'm sure no intelligent white person in his or her right mind wants black men and women marrying their white sons and daughters, in return introducing their grandchildren to half-brown, kinky-haired people. I want to be with my own. No woman on this whole earth can please me and cook for me and socialize and talk to me like an American black woman. He goes on to say, you can't take no Chinese man and give him no Puerto Rican woman and talking like they're in love and emotionally in love and physically, he said in 1971.
So with that remark, you know, I think what you're just asking, like, if we shave off these parts of these people that kind of we look at them with a reverse lens, right, with renewed eyes. I think your first question was, would we have do we have the capacity to do that? Which I think is a yes. Like, I think we do have the capacity to do that. I do think that, and then I think your second question was just like the pros and cons of that.
Yeah. Are we doing that now? And again, especially when you have, like, you know, it's forgive me, I'm thinking out loud right now, but you have Huxtable.
Bill Cosby.
You have, you have the downfall of Bill Cosby, which to a lot of people is like, dang it. This was somebody that we could have identified with or so on and so forth, right?
Right.
And it's like we facing that reality is something when truth comes out the way it did with Bill Cosby, it's like, okay, well, we can't do anything. But would we seek to try to do the same thing here with Ali as some of these like darker things that we just like, yeah, we're just not going to deal with that because we need him to be this infallible person.
See, okay. And that's, I think we talked about this earlier. The thing about Ali, so that statement, clearly in 2016, you look at that and go, what? Right. So that's one of the things. Also, the thing I love about Ali is that we kind of do know where he failed. You know what I mean? Like, it's very, Ali does not, he, I don't think he necessarily ran from the fact that he had like four or five, I don't know how many marriages.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, four. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, and very quick, like, all right, and you're gone, and now here you're here. You know what I mean? It was like totally. Stuff like that. So, like, part of, I think for me, what makes him great is the fact that we do know these things. That he was very upfront, like this, like, this is what, this is who I am, and yet still strove to be the greatest both in and outside the ring. It's like, but the comment, I think the comment specifically, that comment, you got, again, I think, like you said, you kind of have to look at the times, you know what I mean? And also like the context of the entire conversation, because I think I saw that video live, and I think part of, I think, it was pretty clear what he's saying, but it's part of what he's saying is just like, no one's going to identify with me as a black man the same way that a black woman will. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, in that time, I mean, I'd venture that's pretty accurate for 70 whatever, you know what I mean?
1971.
Yeah. I think there's also, you know, at that time as well, like, there was also a very coordinated effort to divide and conquer the various aspects of black people searching for equality in the country. And so what happened often with black Muslims is that the media and conversations would largely go and say, you are a separatist group, much like Ku Klux Klan, much like whatever.
Right.
And they would hold them as opposed to up against our more accommodating civil rights leaders. Right. You know, the Martin Luther Kings and which, you know, I dispute that argument of accommodating, you know, or, with regard to that. But nonetheless, there would be this, you know, essentially COINTELPRO coordinated conversation to say, why can't you be like this one? And why are you like this one? And so what oftentimes Muhammad Ali found himself commenting on behalf of the entire nation of Islam is to say, well, why do you want to separate? Why do you want to be amongst yourself? And of course, if you look at, you know, whether that was when Malcolm X was speaking or whomever, all of the argument had to do with, we want to be self-sufficient.
Yep.
We want to be able to support our own. And their perspective was often saying, like, if we cannot do this for ourselves, then we, you know, there's no good that we will ever be able to accomplish. You can argue as to whether or not that's the wise, you know, methodology to take. But I think oftentimes comments like that fall in that light where someone is essentially saying, no, you're asking me why can't we all just love one another? And I want to tell you that I love my black woman. I want to tell you that a black woman is the one who can do this. And in that crudeness of his defense, he would then bring up, well, you can't tell a Chinaman or Puerto Rico, all of, you know, just this language that makes us kind of bristle now when we hear it. But I think that context is important in those ways, just to say, like, what's the climate of it? Also, this is a long formulated conversation that often happens, but with regard to racism being connected to power and essentially that power being the dominant trait within racism. And so if you do not have the ability to enact power upon people on behalf of your prejudices or your racism, how effectively is it racism? Like, Muhammad Ali could not deter anyone from doing anything by espousing a prejudiced view, which that is, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Whereas opposed to running to the other side of it when it's like, hey, I actually can stop where you live, and I can stop loans, and I can stop, I can give you substandard education, and I can give you, you know, like all of these other things can come, right? All of these other things can come out of your prejudices. Whereas Ali is this singular figure articulating a very prejudiced view, but it can't actually do any harm to anyone in that regard. But I do think that just on a general macro level, we would be very, I think it'd be instructive for us to listen to the downfalls of all of our heroes and all of our stars. The thing that always struck me about Ali, even now, because you brought up Bill Cosby and I was talking to my dad about this, is like Ali lived long enough like to be like a hero and then a villain.
Right.
And then a hero again. Like he, like when you talk about like, what if Malcolm X had lived longer? Or what if, you know, these people got like killed during certain periods of time where they're frozen in that time as they were, where you don't get to see the change. Or essentially how what would happen with Muhammad Ali. Like if he died in 60, 65, 66, then he's known as the guy.
He's immortalized.
Right. He's known as that guy who is... or rather, you know, like if he died around his protesting of the Vietnam War, it's like, no, he's villainized during that time, like when he dies. But he lived long enough to see the nation catch up with him.
Yeah.
And it's like this weird thing where it's like, man, you know, throughout the ebb and flow of it all, he was able to live that out. Now, similarly, if Bill Cosby had passed away in like 94, 95.
Right.
It would just be us like, man, we lost this amazing da 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 da. Now,
yep,
it's a different narrative to his story. You know what I mean? It's just a very interesting like dynamic, the way lives and popular culture can be, you know, move around. So
yeah, that whole, like you said, hero, villain, hero again. Like I think part of, I hope it's not being lost, but part of it I feel like may end up getting lost now, is how we're like, oh, we love him.
Yeah.
And it's like, bruh, in the 60s, yo, people hated him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, hated him.
Mm-hmm.
You're dodging, you're going to dodge the draft, you know?
Yeah.
And to take, I think what it kind of happened with Martin Luther King.
Certainly.
We talk about like the whitewashing of a certain, like, make no mistake, Muhammad Ali was a radical.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he was a radical black. But like now it's like, oh man, like this, he's the guy who did this thing. It's like, no. Like this dude at that time, that again, it's just, it blows my mind. This is like a unicorn to me. Like that time, and then also I think the sports kind of comes into play too. Boxing was huge.
Right.
Like
very true.
Boxing was the sport.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like Klitschko with doing this. This is like, this is the most recognized face in the world.
Absolutely.
Saying, oh, I'm not gonna go kill all the brown people. Y'all won't stand up for me here. What?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. Like, even now, imagine the courage it takes to say something like that, and then being like, "Yeah, I go to jail." Like, you're not all right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not. What I won't do is go kill other brown people when y'all won't stand up for me here. I'm not gonna
in my own country.
You know what I mean? Like this.
Yeah.
I don't think it's somebody who didn't live in that time to understand the height of which he was.
Sure.
To say that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't think I'll ever really be able to grasp it. It's still like amazing to me.
You know, I have a question too. Like, you know, I think one of the unintentional negatives, however you want to look at it, that has kind of result of Muhammad Ali's legacy is that, you know, he kind of epitomized like what we've come to think of as like among Black Americans, like the ideal Black athlete who can combine excellence in their sport, but then also advocacy and activism for their people in a way, right? And like Michael Jordan essentially threw that other side out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I make money.
Yeah, Democrats and Republicans both buy, or Republicans buy sneakers too.
Yeah.
But like, I guess I'm curious, like, is there not, like, is it unfair that this is something that like Black athletes deal with, but like, you know, Tom Brady's not expected to speak on behalf of any major cultural or advocacy position per se. I don't know. Does that make sense, I guess? Or
yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think it definitely comes up, right? You wonder why aren't sometimes, you're right, they get a bad rap, they get singled out. Why aren't you doing more? you know, you don't have the, where's the Harry Belafonte, as it were, of today. And then when Harry Belafonte tried to call J and B out, it was beef, you know. So it's like nobody wants to accept that responsibility. I think you see some kind of moving in that space. But I think it's a personal thing.
Yeah.
In some respects, I think it's somewhat of a personal thing. My thing is put your money someplace. You know, what are you doing outside of, and not even, I don't know, to me, when I look at entertainers, particularly music, I'm like, just stop singing about what you're singing about. If you don't do anything, what you're doing to culture through your art, I got more issues with than what you're even doing with your money or what you're doing with your activism. It's expecting a lot for somebody to be an activist and they're calling me out my name. You're not somebody who even has that value system or that level of virtue, quite frankly. Right. You know, so I think it's kind of an unrealistic expectation, particularly when it comes to artists, many times, like musicians and things like that.
Sure.
I think to speak to, so my father asked me when Ali passed, like, well, who would be your generation's Ali? Right? And I was like, it's not. And I'm like, the people that could
not funny
be,
dad.
Yes. Yeah, so it's just like,
don't point out the audience. Yeah. Okay.
But I look at it like it, because you asked, why do we expect that from the athletes or entertainers? And I think honestly, it's because with Ali, you saw what could happen if someone did that.
Interesting.
The possibility,
the possibility of it.
Someone
to, for a man to say, this man gave me dignity in it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Imagine what a LeBron could do if he was like, whatever cause he decided to get behind, was like, I'm not only put my money where my mouth is, my voice will be to this. You will see me be a part of this.
Right.
Because we've seen what could happen when the greatest on one end, you know what I mean, in sport, in our athleticism, does something socially, you know what I mean? Like, that's what, because when you talked about, like, what would happen if Malcolm or these people would have lived, and like, a part of me is like, well, they would have been like Ali, but like, Ali still would have been, I feel like, greater just because, like, and I think that's what the beauty of being entertainers and athletes, stuff like that. People will, once they respect how great you are, and you're kind of allowed to do a lot of things. You know what I mean? Same thing. Like
you can be a jerk if you're the bomb, right? Yeah, be the best though.
Yeah, you're like, if you're the, he's like, yeah, he backed it up. But then all you want to do is other stuff. It's like, if you're in entertainment or arts, you can kind of sneak in.
Yeah.
That other thing. And Ali, with the greatness of him, he didn't even sneak it in. He was like, here's it is.
Yeah.
But just imagine. So we look at these people and like, imagine if they cared a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because we can point to somebody when they care how things move, how things change. So I think, maybe it's not the responsibility, but like, if you just look at history, you know what I mean? Like, if you say you care, clearly there's a blueprint.
Yeah.
You're not going to ever be that. We all know that.
Right, but there's
a way you can strive to do that. And I think, you know, I don't know why people don't take the call, but it's like, we see what happens if somebody stepped up, you know?
Yeah.
They don't want to be role models. I mean, I never heard that so much in my life growing up, where I don't want to be a role model. I don't want to be a role model. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this pathetic fear of taking responsibility.
Yeah.
I would like to say real quick before, I know we're kind of coming to the end of this thing, but too, like, I think your question was, do we expect the white people in this culture to stand up and do something? And I think one of my favorite, like, you know, fun facts or whatever, is Bob Dylan played right before Martin Luther King gave the famous I Have a Dream speech.
Sure.
So it is not impossible nor unheard of for white kind of, you know,
allies
to say, like,
true indeed,
that we are gonna rock the boat here, and we are gonna see issues and systematic issues that we are going to address here. And so I don't think, to answer your question, I don't think people of that are white, that look like me, should get a pass. I do think that it's like, there is very clearly systematic issues in this country, and you don't need to have necessarily grown up in it to know that they exist.
Right.
Right.
And again, am I asking for a level of white guilt where it's like, this is what you should be doing?
You Macklemore the situation. Right, you don't have to.
Right. You don't have to, but if you witness something with your own eyes and say, hey, this doesn't, you know, 1 + 1 = 7 right now.
Right,
so
absolutely.
How do we get to 7? Where are we, where's the 5?
Filling that gap, right?
And like, it's that very interesting thing, because it is something where, you know, whatever happens, right? A police brutality resulting in a death occurs. And it's like, so LeBron, speak to this. And it's like, okay. And honestly, to his credit,
yeah,
he's spoken more to that than a lot of athletes have at points. Mm-hmm. But regardless, no one runs up on any other athlete. And then you just want to be like, it's a life that was killed, regardless of who it is. Like, why is it just, why are black athletes just saddled with that? And I think part of it does come from what you were saying, David, where you saw the results of an Ali, and not to make Ali a singular figure, because Jim Brown as well was very much like, you know, he essentially, you know, won the, you know, championship and then quit.
Yeah.
And then just said, I'm just work with these gangs in LA. You know, there's a period of time in between then, but I just think that the idea of sports and advocacy now, and in fairness, I think you do see it as well with other, you know, sometimes you see, I think that there was a punter for Minnesota who worked with like LGBT.
Chris something, I forgot.
That guy or whatever. But
Chloe?
Yes, I think that is the name or whatever. But you see certain issues come up. But I think that the black athlete always has this singular focus given upon them, whether that's imposed upon them by media or by the black community, essentially saying, like, you know, what are your thoughts here?
I just want to say, I do think that we're all kind of hitting on this thing. I do think that while we shouldn't necessarily run to athletes, they should realize the level of power that they do have in this society. Mm-hmm. Like, Muhammad Ali realized the place that he was in, and I think, you know what, I honestly think that he wanted to be great in the ring, and he wanted to live a great life out of the ring, and I don't even know if he would have defined a great life by being in the news and being quote unquote controversial. I think he wanted to play a character in the ring, and he mm-hmm. played it very well. Mm-hmm. And I think he would have been okay based off of the rest of his life once mm-hmm. his boxing career finished. Tells me that he wanted to live at peace with people. Mm-hmm. But if you step to him and he saw what he would like, the opportunity to create change and meet a need, he was going to do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the context for which he lived in the 60s called him to be controversial, and the context which he lived in the 90s and the 2000s allowed him to be much more peaceful mm-hmm. Type of person. So I think it takes a person just realizing the opportunity that is in front of them and saying, I can do something here. And that's not to say that to run to the LeBron James of the world and say, you have to, but we will hold you in history. We'll look back in history and say, you were great, not because you were necessarily great in the ring, which Muhammad Ali was, but so many other people were too. Lennox Lewis mm-hmm. also held the championship 3 times.
Yeah.
There's like, the list is like 4 people.
Yeah.
We're not going to ever sit once Lennox Lewis passes away. We may mention it in passing.
Oh, because he didn't fight the same people, though. If you want to get sports on,
and he has a British accent.
But yeah, and yeah,
that's why, really why we ain't messing with him.
Yeah, but no, you're right.
I guess the point is that, you know, everyone talks. So let's just hold up. Babe Ruth is held in high esteem, mm-hmm. but he's never talked about in a way that's like my hero. I don't think anyone, and maybe that's a long enough time period now that no one ever saw him play. Yeah. But I think there's something there of like, do you step up to the opportunity inside and outside of your sport?
I just want to say, like, when you look at in the 60s in that era, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, you got the Malcolm X. We just sort of name names, and there are like these big kind of singular figures. Mm-hmm. But then you also hear now, like, well, there's not going to be one Martin. There's going to be a group of Martins. It's, mm-hmm. it's kind of in the collective mm-hmm. that you actually see change happen. And so when we're looking to a LeBron, you can kind of take a note from the University of Missouri and the whole football mm-hmm. team, yes. right?
Sure.
Like, they came together and said, and this way it wasn't, name somebody from the team.
Right.
You don't know anybody from the team, because there wasn't one hero necessarily, but it was solidarity coming together and saying, let's do something about this. I mean, imagine if the NBA was like, we're not playing because we feel some type of way.
Sure.
Now, all of a sudden, okay,
you're
messing with money,
right.
And that always moves the needle in a direction that it wasn't going initially,
absolutely.
Right? So I think it's not even so much just one that we need to look to, but more so the collective. I wish that they would see the power that they have. Mm-hmm. Because back then, it might have just been, well, we got Harry Belafonte.
Right.
We got one.
Yeah,
we got one black person that's over there. But the game isn't quite the same anymore, you know, like in the collective. I think there's a greater power.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think, you know, like, man, so many good thoughts. I you know, I was just thinking about how, you know, Ali did become this beloved character, this beloved figure. But it's also like, man, he was harmless at this point, though. Like, we loved him. Like, he got loved by the general world. Like, when he was no longer the, you know what I'm saying? The boisterous threat he couldn't do. It's like, I don't want to say this because he was always, like, he's always a man. But it's like, if you defanged the snake, like, can you love the snake now? Because he can't, Ali can't do what he was doing before. Like, he's essentially this shaking man who, you know, whatever. But, you know, there's that side of it. But I do think that, you know, the MC in me just always loves Ali because that bars. I mean,
bars, right?
Bars. Just bars. Just
bars.
Just bars. But I, you know, I wanted to end really fast with his. He did an interview with Alex Haley in Playboy back in the day, and they asked Alex Haley had asked him, you know, do you think how will you be remembered, essentially? And so Ali had said, you know, I don't know, but I'll tell you how I'd like to be remembered: as a black man who won the heavyweight title and who was humorous and who treated everyone right, as a man who never looked down on those who looked up to him and who helped as many people of his people as he could financially and also in their fight for freedom, justice and equality, as a man who wouldn't hurt his people's dignity by doing anything that would embarrass them, as a man who tried to unite his people through the faith of Islam that he found when he listened to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And if all of that is asking too much, then I guess I'd settle for being remembered only as a great boxing champion who became a preacher and a champion of his people. And I wouldn't even mind if folks forgot how pretty I was. You can't beat that in terms of off the cut.
So just we'll post these pictures, but the Scottish Sun was blessed, one of the photographers, to do the last portrait session with him.
Oh, yeah.
And, these images, one, you see a man just like rattled by a disease, right? A terrible, terrible disease. But at the same time, he is still
the champ, right?
He's still just like I'm good looking.
I'm a bad man.
That's my favorite.
Like, golly, man. Yeah. And so again, I think as a 9-year-old, there's still a huge part of me that's just like, I don't know enough about him, but what I do know about him is he should be admired.
Absolutely.
And so
that's beautiful.
That's great,
man. I will say this as well, you know, Ali, you know, articles about him since he was a kid, and what, like you said, we'll post some of like those links to those pictures as well.